means to us. There is a man in the congregation here, a little bit older than I am, and he hadn't been a Christian for real long. And we get together and study two or three or four times a month. And one of the expressions he uses pretty much most of the studies is, he said, it's just another exciting adventure. And that's true no matter what book we happen to be studying. And it is true. No matter where you're studying the Bible, it's always another exciting adventure, another opportunity to listen to the Lord and what He says and what He's done. And so I'm thankful for the Lord providing us with such a tremendous resource in His Word. We've seen the Israelites complain about water, food, and water. Wonder what else is going to happen. Chapter 17, 8 to 14.
Now Amalek came and fought with Israel and Reuben. And Moses said to Joshua, choose some men and go out and fight with them. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him, and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of his sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this for a memorial in a book, and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek.
I should have said 16.
And Moses built an altar and called its name, The Lord is my banner. For he said, because the Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation.
As if they didn't already have enough challenges, what do they face here?
Enemy.
Enemy attack. Amalek is coming to fight against them. And how do they approach this battle? Who is going to fight? Joshua is going to lead the army. Who else is going to be involved in the battle? Moses. Where is he going to be? He's going to be up on top of a hill. The battle is going to be down in the valley. Now Joshua and his men are going to fight the battle. So what's Moses going to do up there on top of the hill? Yes, he's going to have the staff of God in his hand. He's going to raise his hand up. Now how do things go when Moses holds his hand up? Yeah, they prevail. Ever tried to hold your hand up?
Goes to sleep.
Goes to sleep and then... Yeah, I mean, you know, my hand is already kind of like, well, I'd rather put it down. You know, I admire you painters. I'm not sure how you do that. But what happened when Moses would let his hand drop? Yeah. Now, that seems weird. You've got Joshua and his men down there on the ground doing the fighting, but the outcome of the battle seems to depend more on whether or not Moses has his staff raised or not. Why is that?
To show where their power is coming from.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. The staff symbolizes God's help. And that's really the key to victory. The same staff that had been used by God to bring plagues, to produce water from the rock and so forth, is the visible instrument of God's power and help. And so it really wasn't Joshua on the battlefield that was determining success or failure. It was the Lord, it was the upraised staff that symbolized God's help. So when Moses' hand dropped, Amalek got the upper hand. And since Moses wasn't able to keep his hands up, what did they do? God helped. Aaron and Hur on either side of him helped steady his hands so he could keep them up. And that way, Joshua and his men won the battle. Good example of how we need to be working together in the service of God. An excellent example of how what God does in these battles is the more important factor. Not that Joshua didn't have a part to play, but really the success, the victory, depended most on the Lord. And then God said he will not forget what Amalek did, but they will ultimately be blotted out. Comments or questions on this story? Daniel.
Are we supposed to assume that Moses got all this information from God? Like, I mean, about, you know, Joshua going to fight him and holding up the hand, or that something like it was like trial and error? Or, I mean, what are we, because God's not mentioned as far as telling Moses to hold his hands up or to...
I'm not big on the trial and error idea, so I guess if the only options are, I'm cool with God telling him. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of things we are not specifically informed of, but we are informed in the sense we see the results. Michael.
If that was the case, what do you imagine Moses said? God, not saying, you need to hold your hands up. It's kind of like Naaman going dipping that river. And you know, we can sometimes think, oh, that's silly. Why would God want that of us? Why couldn't I do this? Or whatever. But he was accepting of what the Lord wanted.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Sometimes God's logic and ours don't match up. I say ours is the defective one. Okay, other thoughts, Roger?
I think it's interesting that it was like both of their heads. It wasn't just one.
Right.
Right. It was both of their heads. I think it's interesting that as long as Moses' hands were up, it was a battle. And I think for us in the New Testament, is as long as we are praising God and praying to him, and our hands are up, I mean, we're going to, God is going to give us victory.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the application. We depend on the Lord, and we need to have our hands up appealing to him. You know, I think that's kind of the symbolism of this. The Bible sometimes even describes prayer as raising your hands to the Lord. I don't know that that always means like literally, but that's what prayer is. It's raising our hands to God. And so he was literally doing this, symbolizing the appeal to God for his help. Mason?
I guess the first thing I ask when I get here, it seems like all of a sudden, why is God having them fight the battle? It's like, God's been doing it all the while. All of a sudden, now they're actually going to choose men to fight. And so I guess, to me, the main emphasis seems to be, as they're going to be fighting more and more, and as God lets them do that, and as they're going to be not having magic mana and magic battles, and they're going to start having to feed themselves, and that they'll still know that they're not really the ones feeding themselves. They're still not the ones winning the battles. But it is still better than God.
Yes. Excellent. Bill.
So do you think that God spoke to Moses and God told Moses will tell Joshua to go choose certain men and to do this?
I'm assuming God has given Moses ample instructions. I don't know exactly how that was, but I'm assuming so. Brian, right?
I'm going to add to what Roger was saying, how we're supposed to be reaching for God. Another point that we can make of that is when his hand grew, when he was weak, his arms became heavy, his people came and they helped him. Just as if we're reaching for God and we find struggles, we can go to our brethren, we can ask their prayers, and they can help us, just as Moses' people helped him.
Good point. I mean, sometimes we need our brothers to help hold our hands up. Exactly. So.
I think it's neat to remember that Amalek was Esau's grandson. Israel's always fighting their cousins.
You're right. Good point, Rick.
I really like Joshua's attitude here. He didn't seem to question this at all. Okay, that's what we're going to do. No problem. Let's go and do this. And the other thing to mention with that is this is not a people that had a real strong military at this point. God specifically steered them away from the Philistines because he was afraid they were going to turn away from Egypt whenever they faced the war.
Yeah, good point. Also, it's probably worth mentioning, it really stinks that Amalek pounced on these, you know, guys just as soon as they got out of Egypt. I mean, that's certainly a, rather opportunistic attitude on Amalek's part. You know, they ought to picked on somebody their own size. Of course, you know, it turned out with the Lord they were. But Joe, do you have?
I'm thinking what great training this is for Joshua. To Mason's point, when they go into the Promised Land, the first battle is when they're defeated by the Lord in Jericho, and then they're going to have to go and fight. Here, God defeated the Egyptians, and now they have to go and fight.
Yeah, okay, excellent point. Good thought. Roger.
Is this character her, or is it a girl?
Well, I think that's a boy.
English.
We do know something about her. What do we know? I've forgotten. JD?
I don't remember if he's from the tribe of Judah of some sort, and which would be symbolism of you have the Levites on the one hand and the tribe of Judah on the other. So combined strength of once we combine the Messiah, they have victory.
Okay, that's cool. I didn't know that. So. Tim?
And this is the occasion of why Saul was supposed to destroy the Israelites.
That's correct.
Although, I mean, I guess you don't have the answer, but why didn't you just do something here? Like, it just seems strange to kind of keep that punishment reserved for, years later.
Well, it probably seems stranger to people like us who are affected by time than what it does God. And really, I think that Haman was an Amalekite, and that part of the extermination of Haman's family was a part of this curse as well. He was an Agagite, and Agag was the leader of the Amalekites. It looks like the Amalekites were like scattered in different nomadic tribes, and so there were several groupings of them. But anything else? Okay, chapter 18, we face a